Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to this Patreon exclusive episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host Mark Packham, who is with me.
Hello, my name is Matt.
And I'm Joe.
Thanks very much for joining us. If you're listening to this, that means you've contributed to our Patreon campaign, which we thank you for. You're helping us keep the show going. You're helping us buy the lovely dark chocolate digestives that are sat on the desk here.
All right.
And this rather expensive Dragonfly Rooibos tea.
Oh, I just got an Earl Grey.
Well, we are indeed money. So, thanks for joining us. We had like loads and loads of questions this week that didn't make it into the regular podcast. So
many.
We're just going to sit and go through those, really. Some interesting topics, some cool stuff that people are asking, and some stuff where I think it's going to be super informative. This one, I actually don't know the question to this, because I think that some things
you
have changed.
You don't know the question to this?
I don't know the question. I don't know the answer to this question, because it's been a while since I've kind of been involved in this. But Corey asks, could you clear up the difference between 58, 59, 60s necks in terms of the 2015 range? I own a traditional and have played the others. I'm sure it's been covered before, but I get confused. Also, what would be classed as an Epiphone Les Paul... What would... An Epiphone Les Paul standard neck be classed as. Matt Knight, you probably have the most day-to-day interactions with the 2015 range.
Yeah.
None of them are really... If we're talking about the standard 2015s, they're not really 58, 59 or 60s, are they?
No,
so
they're
all really wide. They're all like seven-string...
Well, they're all the same width, but the actual curve of the back of the neck is different depending on the model that you go for. So, like, the traditional, they call the XL neck. So, well-rounded and sort of slotty, but the width is the same. So, the width will be the same on the studio. It's just that they put, like, a different neck curve on. Between 58, 59 and 60, as you go up in years on custom ranges, they generally get slimmer. Because I suppose, really, he's listing three different types of necks. He's listing a traditional custom shop-style neck, i.e., 58 59, then standard 2015s, and then an Epiphone. But then Epiphones are like a different neck shape in their own right altogether. I suppose that with Epiphones they're just going for a traditional rounded profile, but it's not necessarily like a custom profile neck.
I suppose they were just a bit 60s, the Epiphone ones.
Yeah, I suppose the thing is that, you know, they want to keep traditional neck profiles on custom shops only, because they want people who want a custom shop to go out and who want those neck profiles to go out and buy a custom shop. Whereas if you want something similar, you go out and buy a traditional. And if you don't have that much sort of money, you go out and buy like an Epiphone Les Paul standard, which will give you the next closest thing.
It's
difficult because with necks, they're all so different, aren't they?
Well, on the Epiphone, I guess they've just gone for generic Les Paul neck. It's like a chunky mahogany neck. Whereas, like you say, when you get to the custom shop, they get more specific. And the way that they're branding the 2015 range and the way they're designing it is they're not classic. You know, even though there's a model called the traditional and there's a model called the classic still, is there still a classic in the 2015 range?
So it's LPM, Studio, Deluxe, Traditional, Standard.
Right, okay.
Don't forget the Les.
What's in there.
The Les Paul, yeah. But they're,
Oh, and got the Junior, the Double Cut, and the Les Paul, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they're basically saying these guitars have the 2015 neck. It's a modern neck that's different to things that we've done in the past. This is where we feel the direction of Les Paul necks should be going. So yeah, they're not really comparable, really. They're flat and wide, I guess.
I suppose that's, yeah, it's they're all that same sort of, like I say, they're all that same sort of width, but it's just the actual, what they call the profile, the back of the neck that is different. Oh, and they do a classic. I completely forgot about that. Of course they do. That's the cheap. That's slightly cheaper than the deluxes.
Yeah.
Neck profile on those, yeah, is the slim taper, like the 60s neck profile. And then on the standard, I think they just put like a rounded profile, if I remember correctly. What do they call that one? Yeah, slim taper, asymmetrical, so slightly rounded more on the treble side.
So, Cole says, what's your opinion on drive pedal order? I have a Dodd Preamp 250, an Ibanez TS9DX, a Mojo Mojo, and an SD1. What order would you put them in? Also, where would you put an EQ pedal, Boss G7, in your chain?
Great pedal.
My other pedals are the drives mentioned above, the CH1 Chorus, a Hall of Fame, Flashback Delay, and a Viscous Vibe. I mostly use the EQ for a mid-boost. So, basically, where... I mean, let's speak in kind of sort of generic terms here, because we could get bogged down in Cole's specifics of his pedal board. So drive pedals, I guess the wisdom is like lowest gain to highest gain, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, because it's those are sort of closer to being a preamp are going to go first. So the Tube Screamer's obviously the first one there. Well, I'd put the EQ pedal before anything else.
I'd put the Dodd preamp, I would say, would be the first
one.
Oh,
sorry, I missed that. The Dodd preamp, yeah, the preamp, then the EQ, and then the...
Then the Mojo Mojo, then the SD1?
Then the Tube Screamer, sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the Mojo Mojo, and then the SD1. I think the Mojo Mojo and SD1 you could have either way around. I, in fact, don't know why you have both on your board. They're really similar things.
For me. Yeah, it's weird, because obviously there was a really quite... interesting article from Pete Cornish, who's actually like, no, if I'm going to do a pedal board, I actually put that completely the opposite way around, because as you go from lightest to most heaviest gain, all you're doing is stacking drive on top of drive, so you get the same sound, just more distortion. Whereas if you go the other way around, every time you stack a distortion pedal, the lighter drives sound slightly will kind of add a different tonal characteristic to the more heavy distortions.
That's an interesting
idea. Yeah. And I've recently got three quite different drive pedals that I've just like kind of been experimenting with the order, and actually putting something like a Soul Food, for example, at the end or in between two kind of heavy drives works really well, because then you've got almost a boost for a heavy drive, but then you've also got a gain boost for the next one in the chain. A lot of the time, going lightest to most distorted is the most, I suppose, basic way of doing it.
What do we think on the EQ? Joe seems to think in the front of the chain, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd have it before the drives. If you're using it as a mid boost.
What are you saying, Matt?
I go at the end. Joe's right, if you're using it as like a mid boost or something, that having it right at the front would make a big difference.
I guess it depends on whether you want to shape the inputs to your pedal board, whether you want to shape...
I think he said he wanted it as a mid-boost.
Yeah, 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 but just in general, generally, like, it's whether you want to shape the sound going into your pedal board or whether you want to shape the sound coming out the other end.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will put it in the effects loop and use an EQ pedal rather than the amp's EQ. They leave the amp EQ flat and then use that to actually change the EQ of the final product, as it were. So yeah, it all depends really, but yeah, mid boost definitely put it in the front, or if you're using it just as a volume boost, which we've kind of recommended quite a few times.
Yeah.
I guess front of the chain for that.
Yeah, of course.
Put it before everything else. Yeah. So what should we do next? Okay, this is one that I have no insight on at all, because I've not actually seen one in the wild. Sean says the Trio What am I missing? I know several people that have got them and rave about them. Got one yesterday, and I'm just not getting how it's any improvement over just downloading backing tracks. Have you either of you two tried one yet, the Digitech Trio?
I mean, I haven't tried one, but I have witnessed one being tried in the flesh as such. I mean, I'm not a guitarist, am I? So I'm what use
that
do
sounded
I have
like an excuse in court.
Oh, yeah.
I've not tried one, but I have witnessed one being tried.
So pedal dogging.
Pogging.
Yeah. No, I'm the same. I have maybe I should see if I can plug one in and maybe give my account on it next week. But yeah, I don't know because all the video when
I'm
I first
so
heard about
the product,
I was like, yeah, it's just
I don't get what it's given. I know it's the idea of a backing track that can work around your playing and stuff like that. Yeah, that's cool. I guess, and I understand if it's kind of a replacement for people if you. You know, if you want to have a jam. And so as maybe a learning tool, it's slightly more dynamic than backing tracks. I don't know if I'd want to pay that. I don't know how much they cost.
They're like 150 quid.
I don't know if I want to pay 150 quid for something when it is so similar to backing tracks, which you can get for free off of YouTube. You know, I don't know.
It's naughty.
Yeah, I just don't know if I'd want to invest that sort of money in the Trio. I mean, I must be missing something as is Sean?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, as is Sean. We must be missing something, mate, because they are sold out in all the UK guitar shops. Every time they get some in, they just go straight out the door.
It's like that other product, the Beat Buddy. Have you seen that?
Yeah,
which
I've seen
just
them.
The drum machine.
Yeah.
And I've seen some pretty good demos of that where you've actually got like different fills and things like that. And it seems really good, but I'm just thinking almost wouldn't it be a little bit just limited? Because the dynamic of the whole performance and what the Trio gives you is just going to be a bit sort of flat. I just don't know. I think I'm in the same boat as Joe said. It's just like I must be missing something. I just probably just need to plug one in and have a go, really.
For me, I think the trio is definitely more appealing than the Beat Buddy, because the way I would use it is like, okay, I want to write a song or work on a part or something, and I don't necessarily have time to sit down and program drums. Like at the moment, I'm kind of gearing up to do some more music and do a new album and stuff. And all the songs are like written. The thing I can't bring myself to do before I like meet up with the band is program some drum tracks and stuff. I just can't get the energy to do it. So the Trio for me, if I could just play my guitar and then it basically fills in the rest for me, that's completely ideal. I'd never use it for performance. I understand why people would. You know, if you're playing in like a restaurant or like you're just doing
even
like
a busking tool for instrumental buskers, it's quite
completely
useful.
Yeah, because it means you don't have to like sit and program any backing tracks, but you can tailor them to what you want. Obviously, if you're just downloading backing tracks, then they're upset. Whereas the Trio like works around your playing basically. So I can see the point of it, but for me, it's like, do I want to spend 150 quid on the fact that I'm lazy to not program any drums and I'll probably end up getting worse results? Like, it definitely won't do exactly what I want it to do.
It's going to take you a long time to make back that money busking.
Well, I won't be doing any busking.
No.
I'll be, you know, jetting around the world playing sold-out arenas.
Of course.
No, I won't. The Trio, it's an interesting thing. I think as a kind of first attempt, it's actually worked out quite well, because normally we get these things. We see a video of it, for example, the Miku pedal, and we're like, that is going to be amazing, game changer. And then sometimes, maybe in the case of the Miku, things don't quite work out as we planned. But the Trio so far, people who are into it seem to be really into it. Like, it functions very, very well indeed, which is quite, it's quite technically difficult, I guess, like to build like a workstation, you know, for making backing tracks and stuff in a guitar pedal, and it's generating it itself. It seems pretty incredible for 150 quid, actually.
Yeah.
But not to everyone's taste. So, Gavin asks, if you could meet any guitarist, alive or dead, and ask them one question, even to get their secret tone combination or string gauge, what would it be? Joe Branton.
Oh, no. Go to Matt Knight. You always go to Matt Knight.
Oh, no. Don't go to me. I don't know.
I didn't read this question. I can't even see.
Actually, I tell you what, I reckon George Harrison, like late 60s era Beatles, when he had that wicked beard, and then just be like, just sit down in Abbey Road and just like, just play guitar with him, and just be like, yeah, you're the best. You're the actual best.
He's pretty cool around that time, isn't he?
Yeah. Just, you know, there's just something about the, like, when you see him playing that Strat, and you're just like, man, it would have just been so cool to just meet him and be like, because were you working when that time a friend of mine bought in the fretless guitar that was given to him by George Harrison?
I did play it. I happened to just swing by the shop at that point, and you were like, you've got to see this. It's amazing.
Sorry, you cut out a bit there, Mark.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm just saying that you popped in and said, like, oh, you've got to play this guitar. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. It's the weirdest electric, but you're just playing it going, this was George Harrison's guitar. This is just, like, amazing. Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's just thinking off the top of my head. I think maybe if I had a bit more time to think about it, I could think of a specific question, but George Harrison, definitely a good one.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's tougher for me because most of my bass heroes are still alive.
Yeah, he says alive or dead.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Yours
is Big Billy Sheehan, wasn't it?
Oh, right. I was trying to think.
What question would you
people?
Ask him?
I don't know.
Why?
Yeah, I don't.
What is the meaning of life?
I don't think there's an individual, like a single question that I'd want to ask them. Just, you know, I just want to chill out. Maybe comb his hair for him. Do you know what? I probably wouldn't have Billy Sheehan, because I probably can meet Billy Sheehan at some point.
You could ask him a question about Xenu.
It should be someone... I could.
Oh, is he a Scientologist?
Yeah, he is. I could probably pick someone who, you know, I wasn't probably going to meet, like John Paul Jones. Well, Jack Bruce is dead.
Yeah.
He's one of my big heroes. I have no idea what I want to ask them. Probably... something about, you know, their tone. How Jack Bruce managed to make bass sound absolutely perfect, no matter what he was playing. Whether it was a fretless Warwick, a Gibson EBO, or a Fender Bass 6.
Just made it all sound...
yeah.
...rocking. Or, what was that signature? Jack Bruce had...
No, not Jack Bruce. You were thinking that you were going to mention that Court, and that's John Paul Jones.
No. Jack Bruce, the Warwick...
Oh,
Jack Bruce signature.
It was like a thumb, wasn't it? But it was fretless.
No, there was two. There was one that was like a thumb, and there was one that was like a 335 bass, but it was like twice as thick, and it had big humbucking pickups.
Are you sure you're thinking of Jack Bruce? Because I know who has a signature Warwick like that.
Say a name. It was Jack Bruce.
Okay, I was just going to say, because...
it's got the Survivor bass, which is like a fretless SG with two humbuckers.
Yeah, that's very Jack Bruce. Guy Pratt had a hollow Warwick sort of 335 style thing.
Right.
He had a signature model like that, and they look quite similar as fellas.
Do they?
Yeah, relatively.
I've never met Guy Pratt.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah, really cool. Good. Great bass player. Has one of the prototype concentric control jazz basses.
Yes, he does. The blue one, right?
No, that one's Sunburst. He also has a Burgundy Mist jazz bass.
That's the one,
also concentric, and it's one of the only, it's one of like 10 Burgundy Mist concentric control jazz basses in existence. But he also has a Sunburst, like, original prototype jazz bass that was a wedding gift from what's his name from Pink Floyd?
Roger Waters?
No, the one whose daughter died married.
David Gilmour,
thank you.
Right. I'd quite like...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
To meet a guitar player called John Jughead Pearson, who was the original guitar player in Screeching Weasel, who are probably my favourite band ever, up there with the Beatles for me. And I would like to ask him, he has a really weird tone. Like, probably my favourite album ever is this album called My Brain Hurts by Screeching Weasel, and it has got this really weird, it's like super early 90s, I think it's 92. It's got this weird like 80s punk rock guitar sound, but it's super melodic. It's kind of rubbish in a really good way, and I always kind of like that about guitar players. So I've been listening to a lot of like The Replacements this week. Do you guys know, are you familiar with The Replacements?
No.
Okay. And what, I'll tell you what, I watched that movie Adventureland this week. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah. No.
You've seen it? Yeah, it's a really good movie, but the soundtrack's really good. It's set in, like, 1987, I think, and there's loads of guitar stuff on there, and it's, like, stuff from, like, The Cure, who I don't normally like, but there's, like, stuff from The Replacements, and there's some Husker Du on there, and all the guitar playing has that kind of quality to it. It's, like, a bit rubbish, but also really good and of the time, and, like, weirdly, I think there's loads of chorus going on because it's the 80s. But when you put chorus like in an aggressive setting, sometimes it really works really well. And yeah, I'd kind of like to speak to Jughead about his guitar tone at the time. I almost bought his like iconic guitar, came up for sale on eBay, but it was like,
well, his one.
Oh, was
his,
it that Westone Thunder or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, it was a Westone Thunder that was used to record my favourite album ever, but it ended up going for like more than $1,000, and I can't afford that. That would have been, and it didn't work. It was just like, it was just a broken guitar, basically. I couldn't justify that. Oh, well. Let's do a couple more questions.
Please do the last one.
Okay. What, the one from Paul?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Paul says, Ibanez guitars. Always loved the RG-style guitars, but hated the Wizard neck. It's way too thin for my liking. Do any of the low-end RGs have anything close to a Fender neck, preferably their hardtail version? And what do we know about the RG-GO range? Joe Branton.
Well, I was only going to answer that. I was hoping Matt Knight could also contribute, but I certainly don't know any in the low range, the sort of RGGO side of things. They all tend to be Wizard type necks. There is only one because this is not an uncommon complaint, and there's only one RG that has a big proper neck, and it's closer to kind of like a no-caster neck than anything else, and it's I've forgotten his name. It's a signature model. The guy has fake F holes.
Paul Gilbert,
yeah. His new, because he also,
oh, the Fireman.
No, not the, yeah, Fireman. It's an RG. He's since the Fireman.
Really?
He's now got a new RG out.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I went up to Headstock, who are the UK distributor for Ibanez, with my friend Joss, and he was trying out a load of Ibanez guitars there, and nearly on the day straight up bought the Paul Gilbert.
Really? Signature.
The only reason he didn't was because the fake F-holes are ridiculous.
No, they're amazing.
No,
everything
they're
about Paul Gilbert is amazing.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong, Paul Gilbert is the best one, but mainly because he was in a band with Billy Sheehan. But yeah, the neck on it is absolutely incredible. Absolutely massive neck.
God,
it's like an RG with a Les Paul neck. It's brilliant.
We in
PGM ATP, that's what it's called. I've just checked it out.
Catchy.
It looks amazing.
I'm into it. I'm going to have a look. Definitely. Quite often in the office that I work in now, we listen to Burning Organ, which is a Paul Gilbert album that is absolutely amazing. It's got the opening track, I Like Rock, is quite a banger.
That is a great title. That's pure Paul Gilbert right there.
The lyrics are, I like rock, the music will never stop, give me electric shock, I like rock. Oh yes, I want to play guitar every day. Yes, I want to play guitar every day.
Those are profound.
It's amazing. It's so good. So good. Any other options you can think of, Matt? Do Ibanez do any other kind of fatter guitars? And what are your opinions on the Geo stuff?
The Geo stuff's all right. I personally would say, you know, they're okay guitars. I think they're about £189. So if you want that sort of style of guitar, but you don't want to spend a lot of money, you know, they're great. But if you kind of want something that's a little bit more playable, you want the Wizard style neck, you know, if you want an Ibanez for less money, then going up to some of the cheaper RGs that are just below the premium, so like the 350s, I think they're like 369, they're definitely the best value for money. In terms of other guitars they do with a fatter neck, aren't there, is it like the Road Core series they do, like the offset style ones?
Yeah, it's more traditional looking guitars, so if you're after that sort of super strat 80s look, then you won't get it there, but yeah, you get more traditional necks on those more traditional looking Ibanezes.
Yeah, but I am really into this Paul Gilbert guitar. Strat Trem, three Damasios, chunky neck, and that just looks amazing. And I love RGs as well.
Like it's a natural wood finish.
Amazing.
Why didn't they do it in green with the pink pickups?
Oh, yeah, I know. That would have been great. But it is still an absolutely brilliant guitar. Sounds amazing and plays amazing.
How much?
As well. I thought they were about 600. I can't remember.
They're a premium. So they're not the super expensive ones.
They're not prestige.
They're going to be about £800.
Oh, really? That much? Oh, blimey. But yeah, they're still an absolutely brilliant guitar and a great investment. I mean, if you want a cheap RG, they do do... an RG with a leopard print scratch plate now, right at the entry level. It's black with a leopard print scratch plate. What is not to love about that? And that's, I think, sub £200.
That's one of the Geos, isn't it? That's a GRG, I think.
Yeah.
Sweet stuff. Mm. Let's do one more question. And I have some very specific thoughts on this, but I want to hear what you guys say first. This is from James. James says, do you believe the quality of today's guitars, e.g. Fender, Gibson, etc., and basses, is lacking?
Oh, I'm glad you picked that one, actually. I saw that one earlier and thought that would be a good...
Let's just get your thoughts on it. Matt.
Your thoughts. Let's get your thoughts on it, Matt.
It's like a thought fart. Matt, can you give us a thought fart on this question?
I mean, without going on for ages and ages, I would say I think the quality of guitar building is better, but I suppose that there is the guitars in general market wide are so much more diluted that some cheaper brands out there maybe drag other brands down in terms of people in people's mind. Guitars were never as good as they used to be because maybe they're not as handcrafted. But I've played some old guitars and they've been absolutely terrible. And I've played some old guitars like the ES330 I played today, and they've been amazing. But I've played some modern guitars like Custom Shops and even about some cheaper range guitars for like a couple of £100, like some of the Squires that are just incredible. So I don't know, it seems to be a common thing at the moment. People are like, oh no, guitars today, she's not very good. But
yeah, this is,
I mean, I've played a lot of guitars that have come out in the last few years, and the majority of them have been excellent.
This is the thing that I thought was quite weird about the question. Obviously, as you've confirmed there, this is very much worded as if guitars today are worse, which I just thought it was odd, because I always thought it was a given that guitars today are obviously better That's why Fender Custom Shop exists. That's why we spend $2,500 on a new guitar that's made to look old, because the guitars that actually are old look great but are rubbish. And I think, of course, build quality is much better today. You can even see build quality progressing over the last 20 years or so, from if you were to take the state of Squire as a manufacturer 20 years ago to now, and look at how the vintage modified series and classic vibe series are sort of really upping the game for entry level instruments. And you look at companies like Ibanez and what they're doing with interesting woods like Jatoba and Bibinga and Avanco and stuff like that that we just didn't see on old guitars. And especially if you leave the sort of major manufacturers for a bit and look at companies like Strandberg, and even some of the really micro brands like ACG or Letts and people like that, and that I just think, yeah, the quality that's coming out today is absolutely amazing. I mean, there's a reason there weren't 8-string guitars, you know, 50 years ago. It's because they couldn't work out how to make them.
Yeah. So here's my thoughts on it, and they're very specific, and I'm going to mention some brands in particular. So I started working in guitar shops in the early 2000s, like 2000... Well, so the first time I worked in a guitar shop was like 1999. And so just a quick overview of like...
Hold on, we were 15 in 1999.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I did my work experience. Oh, my God. 1999. The state of where the brands were. So Fender was flailing around. They were about to discontinue the American standards, or what was called the standard Strat at the time. So those guitars didn't have rolled fretboard edges. They had pretty bad pickups in there. They didn't have decent colours. The range was kind of all over the place. They were doing things like the Big Apple Strat, and like some other weird stuff, Lone Stars and things like that, or it was, you know, loads of weird stuff. Since then, they discontinued American standards, moved to American series, which introduced rolled fretboard edges. Then they had the American standards, which introduced things like 2-point trim, which we agree is like kind of a better way of doing trim.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Since then, they've now put custom shop pickups in the American standards. The finishes have got a lot better. The playability's got a lot better. Just build quality in general, I think, in Fender has got a lot better. There's been some blips, I think, like when they were doing like the basses that where you had to have S1 switches and things like that. It was kind of a bit of a mistake. But, you know, if you get an American P bass now, it's awesome. Whereas, you know, some of the stuff you play from like the mid to late 90s is pretty bad. And so that was Fender.
But that sort of time period brought some great stuff as well, because I think compound radius fretboards also came out of the 90s.
Totally, totally. So that's where Fender were at, where Gibson were at. The stuff that was coming into this country wasn't very good in the sort of like mid... Well, right up until the kind of early 2000s, I guess. They had a huge jump in quality in 2002, and then again in 2008 when they messed around with the standards a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, if you compare a Les Paul now, just if we're talking strictly like build quality and the kind of quality, of just general quality of the stuff available, it is way better than when it was when I started. And, you know, even 20 years ago, you know, whether it's as good as a 58, 59, 60 is kind of irrelevant, really, because you can't get those guitars. What you could get is a 90s Les Paul, and I would strongly advise you to buy something from the last maybe 10 years over something from the 90s. So Gibson, I think, have had huge improvements. I think those guitars are way better than they were 15, 20 years ago. Someone like, let's look at another major manufacturer like Jackson. When I started, the Jacksons that we were getting in were basically like balsa wood. They were terrible. they were just terrible guitars, like really, really bad cheap guitars. Now, even the cheap Jacksons are amazing. You know, yeah. Fender have come in and sorted that brand out completely. You know, hooked up with some great artists, sorted the designs out, sorted the pickups out. The reasonable price points, they're like way better than they were doing again 15, 20 years ago. Same with Gretsch, you know, Fender.
Yeah. Oh, Gretsch, what a turnaround.
You know, Fender bought them at a time when the quality was really bad. You know, if you look at a mid-90s Gretsch, it's just really poor. They look great because they've got like the thinnest sliver of like maple cap on there, like really highly flamed maple. So the way you can generally tell like a 90s Gretsch is from a distance, it looks amazing. And then you get up close and it's like, wait, you know how like flame maple moves under the light? Like it doesn't move at all. It just is like, well, could almost be just like a picture, like a photo flame.
A laminate.
Yeah, it could just be like a laminate, you know. Yeah, so Fender took that brand and, you know, introduced things like the Electromatics and made Gretsch available to everyone, and but really upped the quality on the American stuff. The Japanese stuff. But yeah, I could do this with like hundreds of different brands, really.
You could do it with most brands, I think, realistically, from where they were, especially if we consider... I mean, it's difficult because if we talk about the 50s and the 60s, yes, there were some amazing hand-built instruments, but there is a gap in most guitar brands after the mid-70s.
Yeah, completely.
And there is... I mean, but there are some companies like Ibanez, for example, obviously the RGs that came out in the 80s were amazing, but...
But
I mean,
they're the same now. They're exactly the same.
Yeah. But generally, across most brands, I avoid the anything that's past maybe 85 to 2007.
Yeah, 2005. Like, the P-Bass that I've got and the Les Paul Junior that I've got are both 2003.
Oh, right, okay.
And so the Junior is post, basically, when Gibson sorted themselves out in 2002. And it's also part of the American series, which is when Fender introduced rolled fretboard edges and like better frets and better build quality in general. So like 2002, 2003 is when the big two kind of sorted themselves out, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's, you know, you see it all over forums, like, oh, quality issues and stuff like that. Actually, if you compared them to the guitars that you can get, that you could get 20 years ago, which are still like affordable, you know, there's no point comparing a modern P-Bass to a 61 P-Bass because it's not the same thing. You know, you can't, money wise, they're nowhere near each other. But compare it to something that is still affordable, like an 80s onwards, it's better than anything else that's available.
Yeah, definitely.
So, there we go. No, that was quite ranty,
that was
wasn't
good.
It?
Oh, yeah, but that was good. I liked that. We need to do a podcast on something that we all disagree on soon.
Yeah.
I think that'd be good.
Joe Branton's moustache?
My moustache is trimmed at the moment. It's the shortest it's ever been.
Yeah, still too long.
Only because I'm growing it back and I needed to start from, like, ground zero.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, no.
I think with that, we should maybe call this a night. Thanks very much for listening to this Patreon exclusive episode. By contributing, you are helping us out, helping us buy digestive biscuits.
Oh, before we go, I was thinking about doing a joke per Patreon episode.
Is this a good idea?
Yeah,
you have just said the words ground zero.
I'm gonna go for like good clean jokes, puns. They're always gonna be puns,
guitar related.
Well, this one isn't, but okay. I'll make the next week's guitar related.
Okay, well, so thanks very much for listening. Yeah, you can just catch us in all the normal places. Matt, do you want to say bye before Joe does his joke?
Goodbye, and I hope you enjoy Joe's terrible joke.
Yeah, thanks for listening. I'll leave you with this.
You can't run through a campsite. You can only ran because it's past tense.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.